First, there are lots of federal court nominations making their way through the U.S. Senate, but they don't get the high-profile attention that a Supreme Court nomination gets. Our next guest says we should pay more attention because a lot of the biggest decisions in the U.S. court system never make it to the Supreme Court level. Kimmy King is a professor of political science at the University of North Texas. Kimmy, welcome back.
Good to be here.
Well, we focus a lot on the Supreme Court, Kimmy. Can you talk about the importance of these federal courts below the Supreme Court level?
Well, actually, that's where all of the action is. Remember that the district courts set the record. They are the triers of fact. And what they determine, their initial decision, usually winds up being predictive of how the process is going to go through the appellate stage. Once you move up to the Circuit Court of Appeals level, the level just beyond the federal district trial courts, virtually 99% of all decisions that come out of the Circuit Court of Appeals are going to be the final decision. In many ways, the Supreme Court is really a rarity for the typical litigant in the federal courts. Remember that the Supreme Court receives petitions for 8,000 cases in any given year, and typically they only hear between 80 and 100 and then ultimately decide on those. So it is very easy to argue that the lower courts fly under the radar and that a president will want to stay focused on those lower courts because that's where the real decision is made.
And President Trump has something in the neighborhood of 150 vacancies in these courts to fill. There are nominations out there for about 50 of them. What do you think, first of all, of the pace of the nominations and the Senate action on them?
So the Senate action has been moving forward on it, and he certainly had a number of vacancies to fill as a result of the Obama administration. In the last months, we typically consider a president to be a lame duck where he can get nothing done. And most people will recall from the Gorsuch nomination to the Supreme Court, you know, the Senate had specifically said that they left that seat that had been vacated by the untimely death of Justice Antonin Scalia. They left that seat vacant knowing that they were going to be able to put in Gorsuch. So that filtered down then into the lower courts.
And what do you make of what we know about the president's nominees as far as their judicial preferences, ideology, that kind of thing?
So one of the things that you see when you look over the persons who have made it on so far is that there clearly is a bent toward the conservative, and one common characteristic that they have is that they have been a member or have been affiliated with or have lectured, given public speeches to the Federalist Society. And the Federalist Society is one of the preeminent legal organizations in the country that works with conservative think tanks, conservative lawyers, conservative interest groups on trying to bring litigation in the federal courts to challenge what they see as policies that are outside of the original constitutional intent. And so that pretty much breaks down along the boundary lines of conservative versus liberal.
When the Senate is considering a nominee, how important is ideology and background? How much can they consider that?
So it's a bunch of different things that they take into consideration, and it's actually quite a long process that a judicial nominee can go through. You have seen some nominations that can take up to 2 or 3 years if there's a real challenge in a candidate's record, if you look back historically over time. And you have to go through an extensive FBI background check. They get input from different organizations for the folks on the list. Then the ABA, the American Bar Association, will weigh in and interview people. And then you get to the Senate confirmation hearings. And that's where you really start to look at things like judicial background, ideology, judicial temperament. And what we've seen with the Trump administration, and you see that in any... Honestly, you see that down through time, really since the 1960s, judicial nominations have become very volatile. It's there that the minority party, and it doesn't matter whether you're a Republican in the Obama era or a Democrat in the Trump era, that's where your chance to kind of stick it to the president comes in. keep in mind that, you know, when we look at President Trump, the fact of the matter is he's been fairly fortunate in getting his Circuit Court of Appeals judges through for appointments. He's already had 8 nominees confirmed in 10 months. Understand that in the last 2 years of the Obama administration, there were only 2 appeals court judges confirmed. So that's why most people focus in and say that the Circuit Court of Appeals are moving much more quickly.
We're talking to Kimmy King, professor of political science at the University of North Texas, looking at judicial nominations in the Trump administration. It's not just about the Supreme Court. And Kimmy, let's talk about the process and the power of the minority party, in this case, the Democrats, to delay or even thwart a judicial nomination. What kind of ability do Democrats have if they really don't like a particular nominee?
So understand that part of this process and why we're where we are now is as a result of a struggle that the Democrats in the Senate feel like they faced under President Obama. And they felt like Republicans were, you know, causing all kinds of grief with getting his candidates through. And so they're are procedures in the Senate that you can use. So you have the Senate confirmation hearings, and those have been a little testy, particularly this week. Those who have been following it know that this week there have been some sharp interchanges with some of the candidates that Trump has put forward. And so you've seen some of that stickiness play itself out. But then on the procedural rules, there, under Senate rules, without taking you into a long, complicated process, underneath the Senate rules, even though a candidate only needs a majority, 51 of the 100 senators, there is this thing called the vote of cloture, which to close off debate in the Senate, you have to have 60. Well, when you have a 52-48 Senate, it's very close, and you can see the minority party threaten this filibuster. So what happened is that in November 2013, the Democrats changed the Senate rules to allow a simple majority rather than the 3/5 supermajority to close off debate. And it was the change of that Senate rule that caused much of the consternation about the Senate becoming overtly political.
That would have allowed Democrats to get more of President Obama's nominees confirmed, I imagine. Are they kicking themselves now, though, that the rule that they changed is being used by the other party?
Yes, they are. And you see some of that for those who are watching this week. Again, Leonard Grass, who is up for nomination at the Eighth Circuit, actually got really grilled by people pointing out that he had received a not qualified rating from the ABA, and then the Grass responded that, well, there was one abstention, and then the Democratic senator pointed out that was because, you know, a senator had been out sick. That's why there had been the abstention. And then he reminded Grass that the last nominee who had a not qualified rating had had to withdraw their nomination. So what's happening is the Democrats are kicking themselves, but they're also sticking it back in and reminding the candidates, the judicial candidates, what the process is supposed to be all about.
You mentioned the American Bar Association. They've declared 2 nominees unqualified, one that you mentioned in a circuit court level, one in a district court. How common is it for the ABA to give an unqualified ranking to a judicial nominee?
It is not very common at all. In fact, Grass is the first nominee since 2006 to receive a unanimous not qualified rating from the ABA. Now, of course, the President Trump's administration fired back that the ABA tends to be liberal. There's some grounds for argument there. But as a general rule, there has been a tendency to look at what the ABA says and take that into consideration.
As I understand it, the ABA has rated 42 of President Trump's nominees. 40 of them were not qualified. They were qualified or better.
That's correct. They received this qualified or even well qualified, in fact. And it typically is the case that you see most candidates getting a well qualified, and if not that, even a qualified. It's this category of not qualified that becomes problematic. And so in the case of Grass, you know, they pulled out all kinds of information about things that he had said and done. There is another candidate that is up. His name is Bush. No relation that I see to any of the real the other Bushes. But they really were looking at his nomination quite harshly because he has been a conservative blogger. And I think that that's also emblematic of the Trump administration trying to put into office candidates that don't usually fit the typical mold. I mean, your typical judicial nominee for a district court or a federal court of appeals is someone who has had previous judicial experience or extensive litigation experience. And he has definitely opted for a non-traditional route. You see, for example, he nominated this, and she just was successful this week, Notre Dame Law School professor Amy Barrett, who had clerked for Justice Scalia. And they really got into ugly questions during her confirmation hearings about her Catholicism. And Republicans challenged that this was, in essence, a religious test of the candidate and, you know, challenged the Democrats for being religiously biased because she was a Catholic. And she has spoken about practicing her faith in a professional context in related public statements. So they really did go after Barrett.
We'll leave it there for now, Kimmy. Thanks a lot for joining us.
Thank you, Rob. You take care. I love public radio.
That's Kimmy King, professor of political science at the University of North Texas.